One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
You are listening to The Coming Out Tapes, an audio archive of LGBTQ stories. I am your curator, Keris Bradley. Welcome to The Coming Out Tapes. We are talking to you this evening from the bowels of Oxford University. We are literally in the basement. There is some kind of military experiment taking place. I don't know what you're trying to create in the other room, but it's all very sciencey. And I am joined by Dr. Clara
yep.
Barker. So would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, hi. So I'm Clara Barker. I'm a material scientist at the University of Oxford in the materials department. I manage the Centre for Applied Superconductivity, where we make high-temperature superconductors, hopefully, with a bit of luck. I've been a thin film material scientist for about 15 years, something along those lines, having done a postdoc and PhD kind of around the world. I came to Oxford 3.5 years ago because I saw a job, and it seemed like a good job. So I came here, and I've no intention of moving at all, none whatsoever. I'm a transgender woman, a woman, but with a trans history, if you will. And I identify, my sexuality is kind of the pansexual region, although I have a dog, so I don't really worry about sexuality anymore.
What's your dog called?
Taylor.
What kind of dog is Taylor?
She's a pug. I got her, yeah, we took her in about 6 months ago, and life has changed now.
Amazing. Is she well behaved?
Yes, she's fairly well behaved.
So you said that you are a woman with a trans history. So what does that phrasing, like, how did you come to define yourself using that phrasing?
At the moment, I feel like there's an awful lot of gender politics going on in the UK, worldwide, and it makes it kind of difficult. I would be quite happy to identify as a trans woman, but I know that if I do so, some people will use that to exclude me from women's spaces because I'm not a woman, I'm a trans woman. So it's always, the terminology is kind of evolving, and sometimes it's just trying to make sure that no one can trip you up with your terms, and we're always shifting and changing what we say. And so at the moment, for me, I want to identify as transgender. For me, that's a very important part of who I am. It's a very important part of what I do at the moment. I do a lot of campaigning and work with young people, so identifying as transgender is very important. But then I'm also a woman, and it's also important at the moment that we fight for the integration of trans rights into women's rights, as it is with trans rights into men's rights, but that's not quite so active a debate at the moment.
So do you feel as if you're having to, like, double identify yourself, or is it, like, purely like a way that you have to articulate it to people who maybe aren't trying to understand it in the same way?
Yeah, it is. Sometimes I feel like I'm just having to identify in a way that won't trip me up, that won't, that other people won't pick holes in. It would be nice to be able to just freely identify myself however I want, but I don't really think that that's the climate at the moment, unfortunately.
Do you see a difference between, like, so for you, when you talk about how you identify, is that like how you articulate to other people what your gender is? And do you think that how you see yourself is different because you're having to jump through those hoops?
It definitely means that I'm always questioning sort of nearly everything I say, and depending on the situation and where I am. Sometimes, you know, I will edit thoughts that I have, which can be very difficult for me.
Sounds exhausting.
It can be, yeah. And especially, I've kind of built up something of a reputation that, you know, news outlets will get in touch with me, and I've done various news interviews and stuff like that. And it's always about being trans. It's never about being a scientist, unfortunately. And so because I've kind of defined this sort of persona, if it was, not that it's an act, but it's definitely aspects of who I am, and I've just chosen to sort of bring them to the forefront. And so there, I try and, yeah, I feel like I have to think about what I say to make sure that I don't go off brand, as it were, which is kind of crazy when you're just talking about your life a little bit.
Yeah, that sounds really... Do you have to, like, keep notes?
I don't. I'm sure that I could be tripped up by anyone paying real attention to me, but luckily they don't pay attention enough to me, I guess.
So you, and then you define as pansexual?
Yes.
So what does that word mean to you?
Yeah, it's... pansexual, for me, I would say that rather than sort of fancying males and females, I like feminine people. I like feminine. I don't care whether they're anatomically male or female. It's the personality, the person that I like. Admittedly, style and looks and things come into that a little bit. So, like I say, it's the feminine side that I like, but I don't really care who the person is other than that. And to be honest, if I get on with someone and I click with someone, then I'm not going to let anything get in my way, like gender or sex.
And is pansexual like the first word that you've used to like describe your sexuality, or have you used other words?
That's really difficult. I've always been attracted to feminine people, and therefore I always kind of assumed that that was female people. So when I was identifying as male, I identified as straight. When I first transitioned to becoming a woman, I started identifying as lesbian, but actually I realized that that term didn't quite fit. So that was an evolution as time went on, definitely.
So do you remember, like, did you have, was it all like a gradual process where your sort of like sexuality evolved as you, or the words that you use changed as you had like a greater understanding? Or do you remember, was there like a person that you saw and you were like, ah, now I understand what it is?
It wasn't one particular person, no. It was more an understanding of terminology, and it was an understanding. I never really identified as bisexual. I don't know, other people would probably argue it differently, but to me it wasn't male or female, it was masculinity or femininity, which maybe pansexual isn't quite the right word, other people would argue, but for me I wasn't attracted to manly men, I wasn't attracted to manly females even. So before I transitioned, straight felt like the closest term, and then as I grew older, pansexual kind of became more the prevalent term. And I think that's probably evolved a little bit as my terminology for my gender identity has definitely evolved as well. I started out feeling that maybe I was a transvestite and then I was androgynous. These days I would have said gender fluid, but I didn't necessarily have those words at the time. And you know, that moved on and changed as I grew and finally identified as transgender.
Given the amount of thought that you had to put into like what words you say to describe things, and then also this interesting like way that you have changed the words they use to describe your sexuality. Do you think you, like, how does having a word that fits or doesn't fit, like, what, how does that change or affect in any way, like, the relationship that you have with that aspect of your identity?
It's interesting that a lot of the justification I do isn't because of my identities as such. It's more the fact that I'm quite open and public about this, and it's more trying to change public perception. So for me, I'm quite happy. You know, it's, I feel that I have to articulate myself differently for the persona more than anything else. I'm actually a lot more chilled out than that. And, you know, in some ways I'm absolutely not, but
it's
yeah.
One of those frustrating things that, like, just because you spend more than 5 minutes thinking about it, everyone thinks that you're, like, obsessed with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So do you think that there's, like, a disconnect between when you're doing that kind of, like, practical, like, a lot of the stuff that you do is really educational, between that and then, like, your private self?
At the moment, I feel like the public me is kind of overtaking the private me. I don't feel like there's all that much of it at the moment. I try and take time for myself, but also there's certain campaigns and activities that I'm involved in that I'm passionate and I care. So I don't necessarily get to switch off all that often, maybe. It probably comes out when I'm playing Dungeons and Dragons. I'm a dungeon master, so I just have a million different personas that sort of come out in the space of 4 hours on a Friday night, possibly over some alcohol.
So you're well practiced at switching.
Yes.
Amazing.
My accents are atrocious, by the way, every single one of them.
I will not ask you to do any of them.
Crow is the worst.
So when did you start using these kind of words to describe your sexuality and your gender?
Yeah, I think with my sexuality, that's just kind of a by part of who I am. I don't necessarily pay as much attention. The words for my gender identity have been a lot more important and had a lot more impact on my life. I grew up in the... I was born in the 70s, just. So I grew up in the 80s and 90s. And so we didn't have the internet. We didn't have terminology. Terminology's changed a lot in the last 5 years. So growing up, there weren't any transgender role models. You just didn't see it on TV. For me, I remember seeing a transsexual prostitute on a show about prostitution in Turkey. And that was the closest person I could identify for a very, very long time. So for years, I had fantasies of running off to Turkey, which is not necessarily great in hindsight, but that was the closest person I could identify to. So I took on this idea of transsexuality, but it always seemed like more of a fantasy and a dream than something I could really attain. Towards the end of the 90s, I started with the advent of the internet and the growth of the internet, definitely I started reading more stories, and at that point I realized that there were clubs for people who identified at various levels of trans could go to. So then I gained the ability somewhere to go, but it also gave me the ability to use words to describe myself rather than just feeling like I was a one-off odd person. It actually gave me a sense of belonging having those terms to use. So kind of grew. But then for a very long time, I think because of my scientific career, I wanted to put the whole thought of my gender identity on away. I just wanted to put it to the back. So then for me, it was easier to identify as androgynous, to just neither, nothing. It was just me, a goth and nothing else, almost. A phase I haven't quite grown out of ever since I was 16.
Killer earrings.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I work hard on the earrings. Yeah. So that I kind of put all that on the back burner, really. There was a certain point where I started talking to more trans people for various reasons, and then my gender identity became more important. I started to realize that I had to pay attention to my gender dysphoria, and transition was something that I needed to do.
So why did you feel like within science, when you were pursuing your academic career, that you like had to put it aside?
In 13 years that I was working, at the time it was about 13 years, it was 13 years when I decided that I was definitely transgender. I'd met one out gay person. That was the only LGBT people that I'd met, was one person. So you couldn't help but sort of draw a correlation between there's no trans people, there's no LGBT people, therefore you're not allowed in science, you're not allowed in engineering. My first degree was actually engineering, and I worked in industry for a few years, which was a very masculine, homophobic, sexist environment. So I just assumed that when I transitioned, I would be kicked out of the sciences. And I actually kept hold of that for a very long time. When I finally started to transition, I didn't tell anyone. I was medically transitioning for a while without telling anyone. And then I applied for and had the money together to do a conversion course in a completely different field. This was after I'd been doing 4 years of postdoc work as a material scientist. I just...
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I had my backup. I had a second career, and I just assumed that it was all over. When I did come out, no one cared. No one cared. No one batted an eyelid. Everyone that I've talked to from all those years was absolutely fine with it, which was... a bit of a disappointment, you know, like some sort of fuss, but everyone just got on with it. And that was a really interesting thing to me, that it was my perception of science, because I didn't have those role models, that made me think I couldn't come out. And that's why I'm kind of passionate about sort of trying to be visible as a scientist and sort of make sure that other people know that actually there are some of us out there.
So do you remember the first person that you came out to? Was it another scientist?
When I came out, I actually probably came out first to a couple of my best friends. Once I had everything in place and I knew what I was, and it wasn't the various phases, it was kind of where I'm at now, as a trans woman, I came out to a couple of friends via email, my two best friends at the time. I knew that they wouldn't judge me, but the idea of coming out was still quite a scary thing. Plus, I was living in a different country. I was a postdoc in Switzerland for 4 years, and that was where I started transitioning. Private healthcare meant that I could see people fast. In this country, unfortunately, transition is a much slower. It's a project. It's a commitment. So yeah, I didn't see my friends very often, and I actually hid myself away from pretty much everyone. So I first came out to my friends, and they were fine with it. They didn't really care. They just got on with it. And then I knew once I'd had that little bit of a push, I needed that little confidence, that little confidence boost first. And then I knew that I needed to come out to the most important person, that was my mother. And so she was the first person that I told face to face. And it was very nerve-wracking, but I designed it that when I went back to the UK to stay with her, I told her on the first night, and she was great, really supportive and really fantastic. I'm very lucky in that regard, but and it kind of made me wonder why I'd been so worried for so many years. I mean, I was in my 30s at that point, you know.
Was there anything that your mum said that you remember, like, particularly made you feel like she was there to support you?
I think my mother's quite open-minded, so I think she always knew about trans people. But I think that there was still quite a lot to take in. I'd hidden it from her pretty well for a very, very long time. So I think that mostly she was just surprised. But, you know, she said, oh, you know, I don't care. It's up to you. I just love you, whatever. And it was just acceptance and the ability to be able to just get on and have a chat afterwards that was really nice. I think the funniest thing, my mother said this, and so did a whole bunch of my friends, because I'd been medically transitioning for a while, like, my figure had changed a little. You know, there were certain changes to my face. My face was thinner and things like that. I lost a lot of muscle mass. So everyone thought that I was sick because they didn't know why I was losing all this weight and changing. So, like, I think the thing that stands out for most people is, oh God, I thought you were sick. I'm so relieved, which was really sweet.
So you said that you went through these, like, stages of identifying with androgyny, and then looking into, like, other types of things, and then the journey sort of concluded when you identified as a trans woman. Yeah. But you didn't tell anyone until that point. So why do you think that you waited until then and didn't? Because all of those other stages, like, they sound like quite difficult things to deal with. Why do you think that you waited until you got to the point in the journey that you're at now?
The biggest thing for me was that I didn't necessarily trust my own decision. I didn't trust my own mind. I thought that I still had this preconception that I wasn't really trans, that it was just a fantasy in my head, that I was somehow deluded. And for me, the big thing in accepting that was seeing a specialist therapist, basically. It was quite funny. I had a friend in Switzerland who was starting to transition, and I said to them, oh, I'm not interested in transitioning at all. I don't want medical transition. You know, I'm a transvestite, I'm a crossdresser, I'm happy with that. And it was only when I said the words out loud that I realized that it was a complete and utter lie. So, and just by me saying that out loud to someone, that really sort of made me think, okay, maybe it's not. What was nice about that was, of course, I emailed them like the next day and said this. And they said, here's my therapist, you know. And so I was able to talk to that person. And being able to talk to a therapist who has an understanding of these things, and they said, no, it isn't a fantasy, it's not a delusion, you are trans. That was a really big thing for me that allowed me to accept who I was. And once I accepted who I was, it wasn't actually that hard to tell other people. I think it was just that I always held back myself and I didn't trust my own judgment.
Do you look back at those times and think that, like, maybe it had to happen in that way, or are there times where you wish that you had Like, because you, in terms of like role models, do you think things would have been different, or is that like not something that you really think about?
I mean, I don't want to change my life. I made a lot of friends that, you know, if things were different, I wouldn't have met them. But at the same time, you know, I do wonder, there was possibly a few times when I had enough understanding of being trans that I tried to talk to people, that I tried to let them in. But I could never quite get over that hump. So weirdly enough, like pretty much all my ex-girlfriends said, oh yeah, no, that was obvious when I told them that I was trans. And a lot of people say, oh yeah, in hindsight, of course, the clues are all there, the comments. My best friend, I actually, one night when I was really struggling with my gender identity, I told him I was gay, because for some reason that felt easier than saying I was trans. I don't know why, but it did. Maybe it was because it wasn't true that it made it easier. He knew I had a lot of girlfriends, and he knew that I wasn't gay. He knew that that wasn't true. So, he just sort of laughed and said, no, that's not it. But, you know, we didn't really carry on talking after that. It was just very interesting that I backed out of saying I was trans and chose to say I was gay instead. which I think a lot of people listening to me who are cis and gay are saying, really? That's weird. But for me, it just, like I say, it's all about accepting myself. And I think it was still easier to tell a lie than tell the truth.
Were you attracted to like men at all?
Yeah, no, not really. Yeah. That was the weird thing. I mean, I was an experimental youth, and I had a very liberal group of friends. We always used to go out in the gay village in Manchester, which is where I grew up. A big part of that was that I knew that I could wear eyeliner and dresses and no one would bat an eyelid. So it was more about the safety of that area rather than the actual culture itself. Like, I mean, there's not many bars and clubs on Canal Street in Manchester that I like the music in. I want to go to a rock club. I want to hear metal or punk. So musically, I wasn't really into it, but it still felt like a safe place where I could sort of experiment. I mean, that was another thing. I had lots of gay friends, and it wasn't an issue at all. But that also meant that I was able to consider, am I gay? Am I not? And I was pretty open to that possibility, and I knew that I wasn't, so I just didn't quite have the fit. And like I say, it's only maybe in the last few years that I've really come to understand that it's not men or women, it's masculine or feminine that I'm attracted to. Yeah.
Okay, so you came out to your friends, then you came out to your mum, and you've had to come out to lots of people through the media, and then also your job and all of the activism that you do. Do you have any particularly memorable stories of coming out?
I think there's one memorable one for me, one that makes me laugh. When I came out to my mum, the next day I went to Edinburgh. My plan was I was going to tell my mum, give her a few days to come to terms or think about it, and then come back and see her. And so I went to see my friend in Edinburgh, and I'd asked her to, she was a tattoo artist, and I asked her to give me this tattoo. So we were in the cafe before we were going to do it, and she said to me, because she worked in a tattoo shop in Edinburgh, during the Fringe, they used to get offered free tickets. And so she's like, look, I just got offered a couple of tickets for the Ladyboys of Bangkok tonight. Do you want to go? And I was like, sure, let's go there. And then over the next half an hour, she started asking me what my tattoo was. And it was a key. It's a gender key. And for me, it was all about the ability to change from male to female. It's from a comic called Lock and Key. And she was like, oh, that's an interesting choice of tattoo. Why is that? And then I told her that I was transitioning. And she's like, oh, do you still want to go and see the Ladyboys of Bangkok? Is that a bit? I was like, sod it, we'll go. It'll be fun.
Was it a good show?
It was tacky as all get out, but it was kind of fun. We were the dark drunk goths at the back, just sort of cackling at the environment more than anything else.
Did your friend do either of the tattoos that are on your...
These ones on my arms are actually done by a local artist near Oxford. I used to live near the tattoo studio, and she came in after a little while. And yeah, I love her water style.
I was going to say the colours are amazing.
Yeah, I'd been going into that tattoo shop for about a year and a half before she started working there, and she's had a lot of my money since, which is why I'm always skint.
Okay, so final question. What does coming out mean to you?
Coming out to me was, it was all about acceptance. It was all about accepting who I was. For a long time, I suspected I was trans or whatever, but it wasn't until I said those words out loud to other people that it almost felt like I cemented it in. So there were certain levels of people that when I told them, they cemented it in a little bit more. So, and it partially felt like it was something that I couldn't escape from. It meant that you've got to go forward. So it was a catalyst for me living my life and being myself. And that was really important. And if I hadn't been telling other people, I wonder how long it would have been that I was hiding away from that. So, to me, it was all like just finally accepting myself and being able to admit that to other people.
Thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to me, Keris Bradley. I'd like to say a couple of thank yous to the other people who've worked on this project. So Alex Lathbridge, who has helped with the hosting of the podcast and also the compiling of the music that you've heard, and to Scary Boots for creating our incredible artwork. Please subscribe, review, tell your friends, spread the word. And if you want to get involved and be interviewed on the podcast, then there's a link on the website and in the bio of our Twitter. So there's a little form that you can fill out. I hope you have a lovely day.
Just to do like a little bit of bonus material for after the credits.
Yeah.
Given that you do so much like activism and visibility stuff to help other people, do you have any like advice or resources for people who might listen to this and then want to start that process?
Yeah, there's a lot of really good resources out there for trans people. There's things like Mermaids is a good resource, and Gendered Intelligence, Stonewall have a lot of information. I think for me, the biggest thing was finding people on YouTube that I related to. So there was a lot of trans people on YouTube, but there was some that I related to. And of course, my youth group has fantastic resources that I put together.
What is your youth group?
My youth group is called Topaz, and it's for young LGBT people in Oxfordshire. And also we have a support group for parents of young LGBT people in Oxfordshire as well.
Where can people find out about Topaz?
The website's probably the easiest place. So it's www.topazoxford.org.uk. That's a brand new URL, so I'm just getting used to it.
Well, you should just be able to click on the word Topaz in the description for this podcast, and that will take you to the website.
Brilliant. Thanks.
Great. That's everything. Thank you so much.
Oh, no, that's cool.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.